Hello, everybody.
Hi, Andrew.
Hi, hello. Andrew. This is Linux Voice. This is the Linux Voice podcast. This is podcast series 2.
Yes, it
episode,
is.
Are we at episode 4 now yet?
We're well prepared.
We can't tell, and the reason that we're all confused is because last night we were drinking Ben's homebrewed cider.
Mm. Yarr!
And Graham's homebrewed beer, which he made with the help of Raspberry Pi. Free software, free beer, free speech.
Free as in beer.
Free as in beer, free as in awesome, tasty hangovers.
Mm. Yep, it's taken us until 25 to 11 to get ourselves sorted for our brains to get into gear. It's episode 3, I just
episode
googled
three.
It.
Yeah, nice. Well, luckily we have the best remedy for a hangover, and that is the Linux Voice podcast.
Yes.
Series, whatever it is. Episode 3. I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Mike Saunders.
I'm Ben Everard.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And in this fun and awesome headache-packed podcast, we have news, we have discoveries, we've got neurons to vocalise, we've got the discovery, the voice of the masses.
Yes. No challenge.
No challenge again. The challenge merely is to survive the next 45 minutes. Let's go. Let's kick it off. Oh, hang on. Hang on, no, I forgot to mention the magazine.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh. We're making a magazine.
Yep.
It's going to be available very soon. It really is.
It really is. Yes. if you like the sound of a magazine based on our bletherings, and if you want to read about Ada Lovelace and the analytical engine and how, you know, she programmed all of her cool stuff, if you want to learn about PGP, Python, if you want to really, really understand how Bitcoin works, but in an avowedly non-technical way, there's a six-page feature on Bitcoin that Ben wrote. There's the 51 best things about free software for 2014. Mike wrote that.
Yes.
He did a cracking job because there's so much awesome stuff out there to go at.
It was actually quite hard to select, yeah, because I didn't want to miss anything out.
Yeah. There's, you know, reviews, tutorials. It really is packed full of so much stuff.
It's going to be incredible.
I can't wait to see it in physical form.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Not long.
No, not long at all. Not long at all. You can subscribe to that magazine, which is called Linux Voice, at shop.linuxvoice.com.
Correct. But in order to get the ultra special, one day to be very rare, issue 1... you have to subscribe by the end of play on Saturday, so that's Saturday the 15th of February. If you subscribe after that, you'll only be able to get it from issue 2 onwards, just because we're getting moving now with everything. So, subscribe, don't miss it. Extra special issue 1. Thanks for supporting us.
Brilliant.
So news. On with the news. The first, the biggest story of the last fortnight is that Debian are deciding on which init system to use, and they've apparently they've asked some Ents to pick their init system, and Ents take a long time to decide anything. Because
didn't you go to Oxford last week?
Yeah, I did go to Oxford last week. Anything that's worth saying is worth taking a long time over. But it's a technical committee was asked to vote on what, and there was a big split, mostly between systemd and upstart. Mm. The basic vote came down to, well, depending on who you ask, the basic vote came down to systemd being technically superior but Linux only,
yep,
and upstart being not quite so good under a contributor license arrangement, which a lot of people don't like, but it would work with the other kernels in Debian, yes. So the FreeBSD kernel and the Herd. And it was fairly split, the decision. Cynical people tell you it was split between Debian developers and Debian developers paid by Canonical. I couldn't possibly say. But it came out this morning. They've said it's going to be systemd.
This is a Wednesday. We're recording it on the Wednesday.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, systemd has got a lot of criticism. There are lots of great technical aspects to it, but one of the problems is that it was developed originally and primarily by Leonard Puttering, who developed Pulse Audio. He has his detractors from
What is it? Well, I meant to ask you this yesterday. What is it, the project that he's working on now? Is it Kernels? That's right, isn't it? It's new Kernels. Vivos. That's it, without rebooting.
Yeah, yeah.
So he takes the simple tasks off the low-hanging fruit tree.
The System D has a lot of really good features, but a lot of people say it's not in the Unix spirit. It logs to binary files and various other parts. It being a gigantic lump of code. So,
hang on, what, for the benefit of me, what is System D? What does it do?
Well, they're all the init systems. That's basically when you turn your computer on. They're the bits that start everything. And so they'll start all the services. And look after
used to be a load of scripts.
Yeah,
right.
So it would start everything. It would start the X window, login manager. It would start background processors.
Right.
It all starts from a single process with the ID 1, and that's the mother of all processors. That starts another process. That starts another process.
So when you turn your key in your car, that sends a little signal to a big signal to the petrol engine. So that's that equivalent of that first tiny little low voltage charge that kicks it off.
Not really, because it keeps running, and you can use it to start and stop processes once it's already running. It's more like the engine management system of your car.
Okay.
It's sort of, if you've got one of the newfangled cars, when you pull up to the traffic lights, it turns the engine off, and then when you put the accelerator down, it turns it back on again. It's that sort.
In the old days, it would have, the scripts were the equivalent of a hand crank, but now it's fully automatic. You just press a button, and your engine turns on. And the choke and everything else is handled automatically, and yeah. But I find it hideously complicated. Whenever I have to mess around with it or sort something out, I dread it. I dread messing around with System D.
Well, a lot of distros are moving to it. But like you say, Ben, it's Linux only. Now, Debian does have some ports to other kernels, doesn't
Debian
it?
Like GNU-Herd.
GNU-Herd and K3BSD. FreeBSD, yeah. Yes. So, I mean, it's difficult because the GNU/Linux version of Debian is by far and away the most used. The other projects are sort of curiosities. Mm. So if systemd really help, it does make things better, then they've got to switch to it.
But it also, you say they're just curiosities, but it's almost like a backup.
Yeah.
It's saying that, it's great that we've got the Linux kernel and everything, but if something goes wrong, then we've got other kernels.
Yeah.
If Linux goes down this direction that we don't like, we'll use these. It's keeping your options open. And I like that now. I think it'll be a real shame if this pushes those out. One of the biggest complaints about System D is about how it's becoming, so many higher level stuff are becoming dependent on it. GNOME is a particular bugbear of a lot of people.
As if GNOME wasn't controversial enough.
No. Yeah. It's trying to, there's an argument over how much it does require System D. But anyway, that's a Debian init news. Let's move on to item two. Item two, NVIDIA have contributed code to Nouveau. This is, you may recall, it's about a year ago, 18 months ago, Linus did what we call the NVIDIA salute to express his dislike of the way NVIDIA are holding back their closed source kernel drivers and not supporting the open.
We gratuitously reproduced that photo many times.
Yes. And NVIDIA, apparently, they seem to be opening themselves up. Perhaps this is part of Steam becoming popular, trying to get more into the ecosystem there. I don't know.
Or maybe it was as a consequence of what Linus did, or made it a public thing, yeah.
May well be. They've started to contribute to Nouveau, which is the open source version of their drivers, which for a long time has... It's been okay for the sort of 2D rendering, but it really struggles with 3D stuff. I must confess, I haven't used it in quite a long time. I tend to use the binary drivers.
Yeah, me too. Although I always use it to start off with. Yeah. And it's nice, there's kernel mode setting with Nouveau that you don't get in NVIDIA's proprietary drivers. So it's good for things like high-resolution bootloaders.
Spot the arch user.
And I saw on Google Plus that Linus did give it a thumbs up. As the next hand gesture for NVIDIA. It's great news, because just 2 years ago, 3 years ago, NVIDIA were certainly out in the cold. Great for their support. We talked about it in the podcast, great that they support the next and the drivers work so well, but, they're getting it.
Yeah. Moving on, item three of the news. This is a bit less Linux-centric and a bit more UK-centric. The government has announced that this year, 2014, is going to be the year of code. And they're going to teach everyone to code. And all the kids in school, all the teachers are going to be programming away, and it's all going to be wonderful. And
how long does it take to learn to code, Ben?
That's a very ambiguous question. Some people say you never finish learning to code.
There is a definitive answer.
I shall say it takes a day to learn and a lifetime to master.
I think it actually takes an hour.
An hour.
Anyone can learn to code in an hour.
Okay.
I guess it depends on the language, doesn't it? If you're saying Perl, then...
None of this depends, Mike. You're not looking at the big picture. Anyone can learn to code in an hour.
Is this according to our code czar?
Yes. For anyone who didn't see it, there's an utterly disastrous interview on Newsnight, which we'll put a link to the BBC iPlayer in the notes. But it's awful. It feels so terrible.
Yeah, and to accomplish this grand goal of teaching everyone to learn to code, allocated.
The cider getting in the way of those neurons.
Ooh. They've allocated the princely sum of £500,000.
Wow, that's loads of money.
It is, but when you think about that, that's to teach every single school child in the UK to code.
Yeah.
That's not that much, even if it does only take an hour to code.
Even if it does, yeah.
Even if it does. I'm somewhat sceptical of that. I must be honest.
We're trying not to be cynical about this. Yeah. Somebody's recognised somewhere that people need to code. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
But if everybody grows up learning how to code, then who will be the nerds of the future?
Surely the assemblers.
Yeah, that's true. Those of us that have learnt assembly language.
The thing that's tickled me is that this project, this year of code thing, has a video from George Osborne talking directly to the camera, looking out of the screen into my soul. And he's talking about how, you know, companies find it hard to attract the people with the right skills, etc. And there's, you know, it's very easy in a, you know, capitalist market economy to attract people with the right skills, and that's to pay them more. You know, what he actually means is that, you know, all these startups find that they have to pay people real money to do a skilled, difficult job. That's all.
Did you then drop the Palantir?
Then I went back to my own highly paid skilled job and made my mum a cup of tea.
Yeah, the Young Rewired State, Emma Mulberry from the Young... Oh, sorry, Mulqueenie, from the Young Rewired State was initially part of this, and she's left in protest. And her analysis of the amount of money is that £500,000 is a bull's amount of money. And she's written quite a good blog of seven reasons why the year of code is balls. That's basically her assessment in one word.
We should speak to her.
We should. Yeah. That's quite an interesting person. Moving on. Next item on the news is Steam, they obviously are developing Steam OS based on Debian. They've given all Steam Debian developers free access to every Steam game, past and present. And just more recently, they've done the same to all Ubuntu developers, which I think is quite a nice move on their part.
Excellent.
Obviously, they're doing it for cynical commercial reasons, so they get more support to make sure everything's working fine. But still, they didn't have to do it. Mm. And it's nice. And I saw the stats that 25% of the Deem developers have taken up this offer so far.
That's surprising. I didn't know, you know, whether they'd actually find it too cynical a move and not take it up. But yeah. That's really good.
That is a big number, yeah, considering...
Running a nice bit of proprietary software there on their OSs.
Yeah. I wonder if one of them stole them.
Not until it's GNU/SteamOS.
Where's NetHack?
Okay, the next item on the news agenda is, we'll go back to what Snowden's been up to. He's, well, the revelations come out. Turns out he used a web crawler to pull all his, all the top secret data from...
One of those incredibly complicated pieces of software.
Yes. I think they should be banned. Yeah. Wget is a menace to society.
Yeah. Of course it is. Everyone knows you use curl.
And again, I feel I should speak up on behalf of the disenfranchised masses who don't know what a web crawler is. What's a web crawler?
Basically, it's a way of downloading loads of stuff from a website. So you point it to a start website and it downloads that website and it looks for all the links in it and it follows the links and downloads those and looks for the links and follows those. And you can obviously sort of tweak it so it follows links to this domain or it doesn't go to ones that say login. Yeah, so my guess is he wrote a custom one to sort of seek out the particular sorts of information he was looking for, although that hasn't been confirmed. So for the, in the links, he'd look for particular stuff.
Maybe we can get Edward Snowden to write a roundup of web crawlers.
Is that all? Is that it?
Yeah.
That's like just the equivalent of like Google, but automatic, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Google do have their own web crawler that pulls everything down so they can search it. And there are really simple bits of code. I wrote one in about, I don't know, an hour or two last year.
So you can learn to code in an hour?
I had already learned to code. Oh.
They're also incredibly easy to detect.
They are, yes.
Because, there's this person seems to be browsing very quickly and efficiently.
I mean, he could well... We don't know how much credit to give it. He could well have done
random delays between pages. Yeah. Oh, he's very comprehensive. He's gone back and followed that link.
And again, 90,000 times.
Because, you go right. There's no reason why you couldn't leave it running for a week. It's just sat on your desktop thing. Yeah. An hour, 5 minute, whatever delays between them. I don't know.
That'll fool them.
Yeah. Apparently it did. Yeah.
Well, I read that they were suspicious of his activity, his online activity, and they questioned him and he explained something and they said, oh, okay then. I think so they were suspicious of his of what he'd been doing with the network, but he gave an explanation for it, which is probably even more worrying. Just testing, see if the links are still active.
And the final item on the news agenda this fortnight is Tim Cook has described Android as like Europe.
Yeah, I've got the exact quote here. This is Tim Cook, the boss of Apple, talking about Android. He says, "The thing is that Windows pretty much was one thing. Android is like Europe. Europe was a name that somebody came up with for Americans who didn't understand that Europe was a lot of countries that weren't like US states. They were very different. Android is many things. How many people who use a Kindle know that they're using Android? And you see what Samsung is doing by putting more and more software on top. I think it's night and day." So Android is like Europe, and Europe was a name that somebody came up with for Americans who didn't understand that Europe was a lot of countries.
Yeah, my first issue with this is he seems to have got a little bit confused about which came first, Europe or America.
Yeah. It's a very strange quote.
Europe existed. Well, the name Europe existed long before the name America existed.
But I'd like to know, if he sees Android like Europe, then what is Apple? I'd say it's probably like, I don't know, Dubai. Very shiny, very rich, with very little freedom.
He's basically right, though, isn't he? In the diversity of different systems, different Android-based systems all together under one umbrella.
Yes, I mean, this is one of the things that I ask developers and the proponents like to tout quite a lot, of how iOS is standard and Android is a thousand things, but it's Android have got much better at centralizing it on the age. And it's a lot easier to develop for than it used to be in terms of that fragmentation. And Android iOS is fragmenting as well, and it's like, there's only one iOS, but there's not. There's a different versions. There's a phones now in different screen sizes. There's a tablets in different screen
sizes. Steve said there'd never be an iPad Mini.
Yeah.
So they've been influenced dramatically by Android, and in fact, I think that's what's so great about Android. The fact that it's so just fragmented. You know, it actually is working in a kind of competitive environment where the good phones and good features succeed, whereas, you know, Apple's just so authoritarian.
Yeah.
Well, if you're a monolith and you have one idea and you have to stick behind that, and even though you know it's not working very well, what you get is Windows 8.
Yeah.
Whereas if Windows were more like Android, if there were, you know, various different iterations of it, all tailored to different kinds of hardware.
Yeah. Or if you screw up a release, you know, Samsung or HTC is just going to overtake you.
Yeah.
So you've got to get it right.
That would be, I mean, imagine that. Imagine if Windows 8 were open and people were able to, manufacturers were able to tailor it to their own hardware. It'd probably be awesome.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, my second issue, or maybe third, is he seems to be implying Europe's a bad thing.
Yes. We just took that as a given.
Yeah. I'm personally quite fond of Europe.
Yeah.
I think the diversity is a real strength of it.
We've all been getting on fairly well for the last 50 years.
Before, we had a few issues.
Yeah, but...
They had a few issues, yeah.
Yeah, we were always all right.
Yeah, Mike and I were in Europe a couple of weeks ago, weren't we?
Yeah.
Last weekend.
That's true. We were at Fosdem.
Fosdem in Europe, the capital of Europe.
Yeah. The hub.
With the mannequin piece.
The part that's moving slowest, if it is a hub.
And funnily enough, there'll be a full show report in Linux Voice issue 1.
Awesome. I can't wait to read it, Linux Voice issue 1.
Same here.
Yes, I agree. It's a funny thing to say when a lot of your customer base are also in Europe.
Yes.
And it's also quite a random thing to say.
It's what just strange.
And as we don't have Effie here, I feel someone else should say this, but America is a group of countries. What I think he meant to say was United States of America, which is one country.
Oh. Ooh.
But even then, the United States itself is extremely diverse.
Yes.
I've heard.
Yes. Yeah.
I've not been there. Well, I have actually.
Yeah.
God, I'm so drunk I can't remember going to. Oh, no.
And that's the news.
Excellent news.
Brilliant news. Discoveries.
Finds.
Things that we found.
Oh, finds of the fortnight.
I'm really sorry. It's not on purpose. It's not planned. Finds of the fortnight. I've been spending a lot of time with Linux, so I've got a few things.
Go nuts. just check on your Linux notebook.
Yeah. Well, actually, I say that. I haven't really got anything. I did install Gummy Boot, which is an EFI bootloader, which I needed to use because my motherboard is EFI only, which is interesting. But then I replaced it with Refit.
I thought EFI only was a breach of the secure
boot. Well, standard. Yeah, but I could. If you switch to BIOS mode, there's all kinds of complications, which I can do. I can actually boot it in BIOS mode, but it actually causes a problem with my Hackintosh partition. Oh.
So what's Refit?
Both of them are EFI bootloaders.
Right.
So I've been spending quite a lot of time messing around with that and never really properly tackled the problem of what we're going to have to do. And it's a lot less mature than installing Grub. For example, I installed Mint, Fedora and Mageia, and none of them took into consideration that I was using an EFI or GUID partition drive.
Really?
Yeah, which your drive has to be a GUID partition drive for it to boot off the EFI partition. To the extent that when you install the boot Grub, you can't even skip it. You have to install it somewhere, which is a pain because that just messes it up. So Gummy Boot's really good for the minimalist, and it's easy to configure once you've got it installed. Refit's a little bit more complicated, but looks nicer.
Might be worth a tutorial at some point.
Yeah, it's a good idea. Grub 2 can do it as well, so that's the only one that I haven't properly tried. My other discovery, as I seem to have launched into my discoveries, is a distribution that I'd not seen before called KX Studio. And it's a pro audio distribution.
Hmm.
I've got some screenshots here.
Does it use Pulse Audio?
I'm sure it does. Pulse Audio is really good. In fact...
You're a different person.
No, it is.
You've changed, Graham.
I've been...
That cider was strong.
In performance terms, it's excellent. For example, I was just playing with Pulse Audio last week on my really good audio interface, which is a Sapphire Pro 40, and which now works, in fact, with FFADO FireWire drivers as of version 2.1, which came out in December. This is sound, I can see everybody starting to gloss over.
How are you doing?
But the latency is exceptional. It's something like 64 bits or 128 bits of buffer latency. So it comes down to like 1.5 milliseconds with audio processing if you go through ADA or something like that. Blah, blah, blah. KX Studio is a really good audio distribution. Another discovery I found was something called the Philosopher's Mail, which is like the Daily Mail for philosophers. So just looking at the stories today, the top story is love shortage drives Shia LaBeouf nuts. Followed by Victoria Beckham is a philosopher. And then my favourite story here is stars rescue world from feelings of insanity. That is, today, like so often, the world seems insane. We need perspective. We need to breathe deeply and climb high above the mantle of the earth, beyond the atmosphere, out into a place of unfathomable silence and majesty.
Wow.
So, you know, if you've got Daily Mail overload, it actually looks like the Daily Mail, so it feels familiar. But
you seem more familiar with the Daily Mail.
I am, sadly. Storms teach England a lesson.
Let's not go into what that lesson is.
And then I think I had one more discovery, or was that it? Let me just check my... Now that was it. I was going to mention, when I wrote down the note about Dungeon Keeper, the EA... Android release of a brilliant game that was created by Bullfrog. There hadn't been much of a noise made about how ridiculous it was that the best value perks were like £70 just to be able to create rooms, but it's been like the op-ed column on many gaming sites, and it's become a big news story, so I won't mention it apart from I think it's awful and we really should do something about it if we don't want games to turn to complete mush. That's it. Anyone else want to have a go?
Yeah, me please. Ben, could you pass me over that bundle of colourful paper there? I have two discoveries. I have three discoveries. Discovery number one is Edward Snowden tribute Linux. We've had Rebecca Black OS and Justin Bieber Linux and Ubuntu Satanic Edition. Now there's a Linux distribution released in tribute to Edward Snowden, who is that bloke who has leaked that information about that thing.
Using that web spider.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, Snowden is not necessarily a Linux person. There's no, you know, there's no explicit link to Linux, but
no.
The free software, freedom of information and all that is what he is espousing. And somebody has responded. This is binaryemotions.com/Snowden.
I was a bit disappointed they didn't call it Snowdix or something.
Snowdix would be great.
Snowdix sounds rude.
Yes. So that's great. Snowdix. Maybe you could fork it better. With a much better name. So yeah, there's an Edward Snowden Linux distro. Discovery number two out of three is that Obfuscated C. These discoveries come courtesy of Mike Saunders, who's sitting next to me.
This is great because I don't have many discoveries.
These are words that he wrote for Linux Voice number one, issue one of Linux Voice, which, you know, we've been working on, and these are things that I remember that have stuck in my head from Mike Saunders' awesome words. And if you want Mike Saunders' awesome words to stick in your head, go to shop.linuxvoice.com.
They won't stick there for very long, don't worry. They won't get creepy or anything.
Yeah,
so you won't hear these words in the middle of the night.
Subscribe to Linux Voice, and then when you're reading out Mike's feature, right, imagine that it's in his voice.
Oh, no.
Yeah, feature discovery... Oh, no, thing that I've found.
Find.
Proxy find number two is that Obfuscated C is not considered free software because part of the Free Software Foundation's definition of free software is that it must be human readable.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, this actually came a piece of software that I cover in Linux Vice issue 1 is a very, it was from the obfuscated C coding contest.
Yeah,
it's very tiny PC emulator called Cable 3. It's 4K. It's absolutely brilliant. But, yeah, really impressive. But I looked at the source code. It's obviously completely nonsense. It's all been munged and compacted. And I thought, well, is it still free software?
Yeah.
The source is open. You can modify it if you are a complete lunatic. So I actually looked at the Free Software Foundation's definition. And as usual, Stallman had thought of this in advance. And he says obfuscated code is not classed. He says it has to be, I think he says it has to be human readable. I mean, what that definition is.
Maybe if you provide a script to kind of deobfuscate the code so that you can make it normal again.
Yeah, yeah. So,
although I guess it's hand-tuned.
I always thought that clause was in there to stop freeware being considered open source on the principle that there's still the machine code.
Well, you could run it through a disassembler or something and say, well, there, you've got your source code. Yeah, even though that's not particularly useful at all, is it?
Because that's often come in on drivers, because they're like a graphics card driver will probably be written in assembler. So you could argue that you could just deassemble it, it's free software.
Yeah.
But people always claim that you need the comments for it to make sense.
Yeah, and labels, real labels, not just numbers, But it is interesting,
It is interesting.
So there's some sort of judgment call on whether the code is readable or not, which for me puts Perl in quite a grey area.
Most Perl programs are not free software just because of the language is unreadable.
So that's discovery number. That's find number two. The third find is that you may have seen on the news that the River Thames is all flooded and that. Mike and I just drove over it yesterday.
Didn't even notice.
There wasn't a bridge. It just picked up speed on one side.
Yeah. Aquaplaned over there.
Like in that James Bond film where he does the corkscrew jump.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You can do this in a hire car. You know? they're not my shock absorbers. Those are the finds that I found.
Can I go next? Because I have a related find. Andrew and I were driving down from the frozen north yesterday and I found out that there is a place in Wiltshire called New Zealand.
I've seen the sign.
Have you seen the sign? Because I thought I was going mad. I said to Andrew, look, I've just seen that. I think I've just seen the sign for New Zealand. And Andrew's like, yeah, shut up, Mike. Whatever.
The sound of the Shire.
So I looked it up on Wikipedia, as you do. New Zealand disambiguation. Did you mean New Zealand Hamlet in Wiltshire? Yeah, great. I did see another sign. We were at a roundabout, and it said Chippenham Swindon Interface. I can't work out what Interface is with a capital I, so like a separate place. It wasn't like Chippenham Interface.
Yeah, I don't
just
know.
Just like it's a town called Interface.
Like a firewall between Chippenham and Swindon.
And my second fortnightly find is the term slacktivism. Slacktivism is supporting causes in a really half-assed way by liking things on Facebook or retweeting something, and then feeling good that you helped some starving orphans by just clicking a button.
The term really sort of gained ground in the Kony 2012 thing, where it's like, click this link and you've saved the lives of hundreds of people.
I didn't really understand that at the time. Kony 2012 sounded like a sports event. So.
Probably some religious sect.
I won't get into it. No. He's a bad dude. He did bad stuff, and they're trying to stop him.
So
clicking links.
Did it work? Was he there going, no, stop clicking the links?
Well, it was kind of an odd campaign, really, because their thing was, he's going around Uganda killing all these people. And he did do that, and it was very horrible. But he sort of left Uganda quite a while before they started this campaign.
Yeah.
And he was sort of in the Central African Republic and Northern Congo continuing to do very bad things. But they were pushing for a military intervention in Uganda, but he'd gone. The military intervention had been done. And it had been pushed out, so it was kind of confusing to me exactly what was
even going on. Slacker slacktivism, outdated slacktivism. And that's all the weather.
I've got so many discoveries. I've been noting them down as we've been going along. But I'll start by going back to Africa for my discovery. In fact, very close, back to the Congo. In the Congo, they have issues with their intersections because they have traffic lights and people ignored the traffic lights, and they had policemen directing people and people ignored the policemen. And they thought, what do people not ignore? And they thought, RoboCop. So they've combined traffic lights and this. It does look like the love child of RoboCop and a traffic light in the middle of this intersection. Directing traffic. We'll post a link to a video. It's awesome. It's complete with sunglasses and big arms with lights on the end with the different colours. It's amazing. And apparently it works. People don't ignore the love child of RoboCop in a traffic light.
So is it a bloke in a suit?
No, it's a robot. It's electronic.
I wonder if it's running Linux. We should go and interview it.
But yeah, the
Skynet.
Yeah, it's in in Kinshasa, in the capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo, as opposed to the Republic
of
Congo.
Not the other one. Yeah, that was a bit. It was much easier when it was Zaire, wasn't it?
Yeah, but moving.
Not for the people who live there, though.
Why?
Because of that crazy dictator chap.
Oh yeah. Obviously, the name's much more important than the quality of living.
Activism lives.
Moving on. Back to another related discovery. You mentioned the OCC, the obfuscated sea contact. And yeah, it's not something I've discovered this way. I've looked at it a few times. It's actually really, if you're a geeky sea coder like I once was, it's well worth going and checking out. You can do insane things with sea. And the whole idea of the contest is to make C code that either doesn't look like C code, doesn't look like it should compile at all, or looks like it does something that it doesn't do.
Yeah.
Or in some way just looks awesome. So a lot of it's ASCII art.
Yeah, yeah, like a butterfly or something, and you compile it and it prints out 1,000 butterflies.
Yeah. And it's well, not a lot of them need weird compiler commands to actually compile.
Ignore
whatever it is. There's actually a related contest that you might have seen. I forget the name of it exactly, but I think it's called the Underhanded C Coding Contest. And the idea is to have innocent-looking C code that actually does something really dodgy, like rips your password or something like that, but it looks like it just prints out a butterfly or something. Awesome.
Yeah, the that came back last year. It'd been away for a few years, and they have a particular challenge. I think this one was it was a piece of code that could go into a social network, I think,
right?
And it had to sort of manipulate, pull the puppet strings behind, and then there's points for if it hides itself under code highlighting, and if it has plausible deniability. Whoops, it was just a spelling error.
It's actually quite enlightening, isn't it? Just how easy it would be to slip some dodgy code into a major project.
Yeah, I mean, there was the issue. There was the one in the kernel a while ago. Oh, I'm trying to remember it now. It was a missing semicolon or something that introduced a buffer over and it could be exploited. And I'll try and find a link.
Did the patch come from the NSA? Ooh, look.
I think there was some ambiguity about where the patch came from as well.
I remember, didn't it take ages for them to track down? Because they released the kernel. They actually, it was after the release of the kernel, and there was some kind of memory erase error or something like that, that they really couldn't find where it had come from.
Yeah.
I can't remember now.
Moving on back to more Linuxy stuff. I discovered Gravity, the film, the special effects for that were developed in KDE, and I believe some of the Doctor Who special effects are done in KDE as well. I assume using software on KDE, not just some weird settings, and that's actually the window board.
Yeah. Wobbly windows.
It's just control.
Sandra Bullock arrow, backdrop.
Arrow. Yeah. It's all in there. If you look deeply enough into the config files, you can do it. But yeah, so it's awesome to see Linux being used in commercial applications like that.
Gravity was an excellent film.
I haven't seen it.
Really, really good.
Yeah, it was brilliant. That was pretty much my favourite film of last year.
George Clooney being a spaceman.
Yeah.
Just looking really cool. Like Martini on the go.
Yeah, it was. We even mentioned it last podcast, so it must be good.
Yeah.
It redeemed 3D.
It's not going to usurp Blade Runner, the official film with Linux voice.
Could do.
I should see Blade Runner.
Yeah, take it with you today. Yeah, definitely.
My final discoveries is that I discovered that, that occasionally... Sorry, I found, yeah. My final found. It's really hard, isn't it?
It's like muscle memory.
My final finds of the fortnight. I discovered that occasionally I can be wrong.
Wow.
Yeah.
No. It must hurt.
Yeah. No, it's a rare event, but it does happen. Now, last podcast, I talked about PHP in WordPress.
Oh, yeah. That created quite a stir.
Yeah. And it turns out I was wildly wrong. PHP in WordPress is apparently a mess. I don't think I explained very well what I meant. So I'll do that again here, and I'll probably still be wrong. But I haven't delved into the internals of WordPress to see how it's coded. That may be a mess of spaghetti code or not, I don't know. What I liked was the interface for the, what do they call them, the themes, the way that you can, and it's more than just theming, really, what you can do in WordPress. You can write sort of custom pages and stuff, and it provides quite a nice set of sort of functions and stuff that you can call. And it's quite well encapsulated that you don't need to worry about stuff that you shouldn't worry about. But apparently there are much better PHP examples than WordPress. So if you're interested, have a look at the thread at the bottom of last podcast, episode 2. And yeah, there are people who know far more about PHP than I do telling you what to look at. The second thing, this is actually from a few podcasts back, possibly even last two. I talked about IP version 6 and about how there was that slight concern that without the NAT translation, network address translation, that with every device has a publicly routable IP address, that there's obviously security issues there. And some quite rightly pointed out that effectively all the router has to do is drop all incoming connections, and that completely absolves the issue. Again, I'm still, I don't know.
Cause why would you have that happening?
Why do you have what happening?
Dropping all incoming connections.
Well, in the usual household network, you'd have no need for incoming connections.
But then what's the point in everything having an IP address if you can't speak to it from the internet?
I don't know. there's the issue with IP version 4 that there just aren't enough IP addresses to go around as it currently stands with on the last block. And
it's somehow surviving, though, isn't it? I remember reading, I think, like 1998 on Slashdot saying we're all about to die because IPv4 is running out, and here we are.
Yeah, I mean, you can obviously... you can sort of NAT higher and higher online. Yeah. I mean, for the average home user, there's really no reason why they should have a public IP address.
Although, well, you'd need 6 of your own, yeah.
But obviously, a lot of geeks do like to be able to run servers from their home and whatnot.
Yeah.
Google put out the statistics for how many people are accessing their stuff with IP version 6, and it's up to 3% now. Hmm. It went from 2 to 3% in the last 5 months. So IP version 6 is very slowly taking off still, but it is.
But if that's for Google, that is many millions of people, isn't
it? It's true. I mean, I think you can roughly say that's probably accurate for worldwide internet usage if it's Google. So about 3% of people are using IP version 6. And IP version 4 does have to die, really. There just aren't enough IP addresses.
I was planning to write my own IPv4 stack for macOS as well. Better get with the time. What's going to come after IPv6? I might as well start coding it now. Is it going to be IPv8?
10, maybe.
Yeah.
And those are my finds.
Good work, Ben.
Top finds. Many finds.
Many, many finds. Or epic find section.
Actually, can I have one more find very quickly?
Why not?
Because I forgot to put it in the news. I mean, I found this, and I thought it was more of a find than a news. Bitcoin. Obviously, I wrote the feature you mentioned it in the magazine.
It's very good.
Bitcoin is crashing at the moment. It's down to, as we recorded, just before we started, it's down to $515 per Bitcoin. And I think this is all sort of precipitated by Mt. Gox saying, oh, there's a flaw in Bitcoin. And it's meddling with those, and everyone else said, well, actually, no, that's a flaw in your implementation of Bitcoin, where it relies on what they call the transaction ID, which isn't, it's not part of the hash. So it can be changed, and it was never designed to not be changeable. So we always said don't rely on it, and you went ahead and relied on it. And there's some attacks now where everyone's meddling with the transaction IDs, and there's DDoSes going on across various exchanges. And ooh,
sounds like chaos.
It's chaos out there.
It's like war games, the Whopper computer and the missiles going from one Bitcoin silo to another.
I mean, it is one of the things you sort of forget, that the internet really is a wild west out there, and there's, you can just check all day. And there are a lot.
That's why we should ban it. That's why David Cameron's right.
Open source.
Yeah, open source web browsers. Pure
web
evil.
Crawlers.
But
Alcatraz.
I'm not really sure what the point of this fine is, where I'm saying the price is low now, so buy. And you'll be able to make loads of money.
Do you have a vested interest?
I don't own any Bitcoins. Or whether or not the point is
Bencoin.
To say... We should start that.
Voicecoin.
Yeah.
I think what we're really saying is that the world of Bitcoin is a world of insanity. And you can understand it far better if you buy Linux Voice issue 1. Ben's written 6 pages about all
managing your portfolio,
the encryption and all of the hashing and the maths and the really just mental cool stuff that goes behind Bitcoin.
But you said it's non-technical.
Ben says it's non-technical. I found it very technical.
I didn't put any maths in it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, no maths. But the logic behind the maths,
yes.
which for me is more important.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks, Ben. At the, 50 minutes. I guess we're ready for halfway reminder.
Yes, it's time now for the halfway reminder, which tradition dictates should be about 80% of the way through the podcast. Still to come, we have Vocalize Your Neurons.
Correct.
We have we don't have a challenge report because we've just been challenging ourselves to make a magazine instead. And we have the voice of the masses.
So... it's time for my favourite section, which is Vocalise Your Neurons. Today, some neurons were e-transmitted over the intertubes by Gwilym Creeper. Does anyone know how to pronounce his name? I think you've read his things out before.
Is it not Kuiper?
Is it? I don't know. I think he should write the phonetics with it when he...
should just have a real name, like Mike Saunders.
Oh, yeah, a man's name. Anyway, he sent in several thousand words, but I'm just going to trim it down to the bits. He's talking about proprietary versus free software and says, on a piece of software I am not reliant on in any way, this means that if tomorrow I could never use that program again, it wouldn't affect me very much, I don't mind it being proprietary. This category pretty much solely comprises of games. This has one exception, though. I'll never buy anything with DRM, because I like owning the stuff I buy. So this means I don't use Steam, ever. There's a justification to this. If, for example, Vim were proprietary, and I'd learned it like I know it now, and Bram, the lead developer, decided to stop pushing updates that the latest version of, say, GTK version wouldn't run, then I'd have to learn Emacs or keep an older version of GTK. However, because Vim is free software, if Bram decided to stop pushing updates for Vim and a GTK update breaks the current version of Vim, I can go into the code and fix it. Problem solved. However, if I couldn't play Minecraft anymore and there's no word from Mojang, big deal, I'll just play something else. It won't affect my workflow, just show that I've been mining blocks for too long. I agree with him that I'm not too fussed about games being... no. Free software, because they're sort of complete. I think a good game should be complete as a whole, and that's it. I don't need to keep tweaking it all.
Didn't you write about an open source Minecraft clone?
I did, actually. Yeah, mine. It was called Minetest 55.
That'd be worth trying.
Minetest now. Yeah.
I mean, Minecraft's wonderful, and it's great that whatever happens to Mahjong or whatever, there's going to be, the principle keeps going because it's captured the imagination of so many people.
And funnily enough, there's something about proprietary games that when you don't know the code, you can't see the code, you can still think there might be some hidden bits and bobs away. I mean, it's like in Frontier. Mm. David Braben claimed once there's a black hole in the centre of the galaxy in Frontier. Now, considering that the Frontier's galaxy is populated with 8 billion stars, I'm still holding out hope that it is somewhere in there. Whereas Pioneer, which is a really, really awesome modern remake of Frontier, the source code is open. So exploring the galaxy, I've got no sense of, oh, there might be something really secret in here that nobody spotted.
I thought that with Elite. I remember in the novella, the legendary planet or star system was Raxler. Do you remember? And Raxler should have been in the 8th galaxy.
Right.
But it was all procedurally generated, so it would have been a clever trick to pull off. Not now, but when he was using every single byte of memory to actually purposefully put Raxler somewhere in there. And as far as I know, it's not there. But my thoughts of getting to Galaxy 8 to be able to find Raxler. Yeah.
When Graham talks about Elite, it's like the equivalent of the Yorkshire Tea advert or the Hovis boy pushing his bike up the hill. The world was in black and white.
It was black and white, yeah. On the Electron, it was black and white. The BBC had a splash of colour down there at the bottom of the screen.
So you had the Electron version?
Yeah, yeah.
It was quite
wasn't
cut
rich
down,
enough
wasn't
to
it?
Have a BBC.
Right.
Yeah, it didn't have any missions. And I'm not sure the disc version of the BBC had missions. And also, you saw the ships as you kept. I really loved that. When you docked, you could see other ships in the docking bay. And there were a few. I can't remember them now. The normal BBC B version had quite a few more features. It filled in planets. Do you remember that? There were two different types of planets. There was one with a Jupiter kind of spot.
Yeah.
And there was one with kind of a few lines.
To show
spherical
the
kind of. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I only really played the Spectrum version. Funnily enough, on a flight, on a tablet computer emulating on a flight with you in 2011 to America. Remember that 8-hour flight to Gargan? I just played Elite on a tablet on an emulator for almost the whole time.
I think I played Pirates for the whole of that trip, which is equally awesome.
And you kept looking at me playing Elite, like, what's going on? This is like I'm suddenly back 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Anyway. Thanks, Willie.
Yeah, you accept it with games. You accept that, if you're going to play Pirates, you've got to play, some old 386 emulator, and that's all right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Should also point out that Steam doesn't force DRM on games makers. Some of the games on there are DRM free.
Okay.
In fact, they were dead against it. I mean, I think I've told this story before that I used to use Steam quite a lot, and then Bioshock was released, which, as I recall, was like the first DRM game on Steam. And it didn't work, and it was awful, hideous weekend of having spent £50 to play Bioshock and then couldn't play it.
Did you get the money back? Or?
No, I didn't, and couldn't get through to any meaningful support.
That's terrible.
So I can't remember. It was Securom, some horrible system through Steam. I eventually got it to work, but it was an awful hack.
I see.
It wasn't the priority version. I think they eventually removed the DRM from Bioshock.
Right.
For that reason.
Yeah, DRM is terrible. Anyway, if anybody else wants to vocalise their neurons, email me, mike@linuxvoice.com. Preferably not too long, and I'll read them out in the next podcast.
That brings us to Voice of the Masses. This fortnight, or should I say, thwartnight, because it's been 3 weeks since the last podcast, this thwartnight we asked, what would you say to Microsoft's new CEO? Microsoft has a new CEO.
Yeah, Satya Nadella.
So, where did he come from?
The bowels of Microsoft, I think.
From the bowels of Microsoft, they've thrown up a new avatar.
Huzzah!
So this, Microsoft Lord Flashart will replaced Steve Ballmer, the Mr. Angry.
Yeah, he's a very different character. I've seen a couple of interviews with him already, and compared to that screaming, raging, sweating ape.
He looks a lot cooler, doesn't he?
He looks
like quite a cool cat.
Yeah, he's trendier, yeah.
I watched he did a kind of a brief video intro, like on the day that this was announced, and it's like a 15 minutes thing. But the clever part is that it's in a single take, and it's walking around Microsoft's offices.
Yeah, he's walking around.
I thought that was very well done,
because
they walk from what looks like the central atrium out to what looks like the reception area, and they stroll through. The camera crew, walking backwards, did a brilliant job.
I watched a bit of that. I didn't realise it was all one take, but yeah.
Maybe that was the interview. Whoever could do it in one take got the job.
Yeah.
So the question that we posed to the internet, and this question came courtesy of Linux Voice listener Ernest Hirose.
Hirose, if he's a Japanese.
Okay. And what if he's Portuguese? Thanks, Mike.
Many copies of Linux Voice coming your way.
Yes. He suggested the question, so thanks, Ernest, for that. First up, friendly responses to Satya Nadella. Steve Newbs says, I would take him out for a pint.
Wasn't the question, what would you say to him? What would you do with him?
Presumably then, but what he would say is, do you fancy going out for a pint? That's good. Benz says,
I'd buy him a pint as well. But more in sympathy, he should consider doing a Dell and take the company private in general. Ooh, how much money would you need to take Microsoft private? It's still worth squillions and bajillions of pounds.
Bitcoins.
Yeah. In general, it seems that there's a new breed of activist stockholder. Unfortunately, all a lot of them seem to care about is the short-term stock price, bigger dividends and stock buybacks. Hmm. Yeah, many awesome suggestions there. As far as the FOSS community is concerned, look for ways to genuinely partner with the community. Not marketing noises, not trying to gain advantage, but really partner. Find ways to be symbiotic. It needs to be more than just a few enlightened people. The organisation needs to change the way it thinks. Yes, Microsoft needs to repair its image with everybody, period. That is, that's Benz who says that. More friendliness comes from Spike102. I would tell him that OneNote is a great application and ask him if it might be ported to Linux. What's OneNote? Is that sarcastic?
No, it's a note-taking piece of software and time management or something.
I know.
I don't use any Microsoft software, but apparently it is supposed to be a good program in that
class. It is note-taking software, yeah.
Yeah, but people say I've heard other people say it's very good.
Okay. Richard Delaney has another positive, helpful suggestion. It's great to see so much love for
Microsoft.
For Microsoft, yeah. Yeah, because, you know, why not? Let's be friends. Let's be friends with everybody.
We all stand together.
Yeah. Boom, boom. Richard Delaney says, this guy has been head of the cloud department. He understands that for Microsoft to succeed, they need to release the FUD chains that have surrounded the company and become a different kind of company. With a refresh throughout the company, along with some landmark PR stunts, such as open sourcing a lot of the drivers, we could see a rejuvenated Microsoft. I don't think they can win or even gain a meaningful foothold in the mobile market, but I think that they could come up with something different given the amount of talent that they have. They are still a remarkably profitable company, but I would like to see this CEO make some radical changes across the board. There's a point. The chaps come from the cloud division of Microsoft.
Yeah, but he was only there for 9 months or something like that. It's not a huge amount of time. He was right in charge of it, though.
So long enough to imbibe the culture and realise that there should be more to Microsoft's business model than just selling an operating system.
Well, presumably it would be come under the cloud division that did the virtualization stuff that contributed that to the Linux kernel.
Mm.
I don't know the internal structure of Microsoft. That may not have been cloud.
I imagine the internal structure of Microsoft is quite big and complicated.
Yes.
Well, they got this stack ranking system, haven't they? Have you heard about this? It's where at the end of every year, one employee has to be promoted and one has to be demoted or something like that in every department. It's an absolutely horrible system. Apparently, Steve Ballmer brought it in and it made people very, very unhappy. It turned everybody against each other in the company.
The clippy person got promoted.
The Comic Sans person.
But yeah, I mean, that would be my most important point, I suppose. It's the opportunity, it's a new start, so he can make change. Microsoft seems incredibly stubborn when it comes to changing its mistakes or changing attitudes to its mistakes. They should have an Android phone, for example. Why do they have to stubbornly stick to their... By all means, if they can do BlackBerry and get really good commercial contracts with their own phone system, great. But don't ignore Android. You know, if they had their apps running on there or their skin or do what Amazon have done, you know.
Maybe this would be the case. It's what people say the problem with Steve Ballmer was that he had this Me Too attitude of, I want one of them. I want a search engine. I want, music player. I want this.
Well, you can see why, because it all dawned on them too late that, you know, the data was going to be the key to everything. And so I can see why Bing is still a really big search engine, and they were right to do that. And they were right to try and create their own mobile phone platform, but they've failed.
I mean, their biggest asset is probably Office.
Yeah.
That's what holds everyone. And they are, I always think they might be better off by, as you say, moving it, opening up it by having it on Android rather than trying to push Windows Phone down everyone's throat.
We
move on now from the section loosely entitled Positive Things. And onto the section which I've titled Release the Code.
Release the code.
Loads, most people said actually, you know, they should release some, if not all, code. I think that's probably unlikely given that they're a proprietary software company. But you can release some code as a loss leader almost, and then to invite people to buy more of other code.
And also, I think a lot of people wanted IBM to release the source code to OS 2 when IBM gave up on it. But I think someone from IBM said, well, look, we're actually not against that idea, but there's loads of code written by other companies in it anyway. So even if Microsoft did a 180 and said, look, we're going to be...
But that's what Sun did with Java. I mean, there was a lot of code, a lot of separate licenses to set hundreds, I think.
It took a long time.
Yeah.
But they did commit to it.
Yeah.
They could obviously see Oracle on the horizon and thought, we'd better get this out now.
Animation 1138 says they could free XP instead of killing it. Microsoft wants shut of it and are no longer offering security patches, so why not? Lots of brownie points on offer. He is getting $1.2 million a year and is worth $45 million. I don't think he'll be listening to my advice.
I do think that if they open source Windows in some way, it could genuinely be a threat to Linux.
Yes.
Especially in the enterprise, you know, with their cloud system and with an operating system that's used so widely. I think companies that are considering moving to Linux, that many of the advantages will go.
Yeah. File compatibility with Windows 7 and Vista and Windows 8. Works on all the hardware, tested, stable, really.
But, yeah, they just don't have the vision to do that. It goes against their grain.
I mean, we can talk about the vision, but essentially their aim of Microsoft is to make money, and they are still doing that fabulously well.
They're
still, I mean, it's easy to say, you know, the PC's dead, they're nothing in the mobile world, you know, the server room's moving over to Linux, but they're still probably more profitable now than they've ever been.
Yeah.
Their quarterly profit they've just posted, I think, was their sixth highest ever quarterly profit.
Yeah. So they just need to carry on, really.
Yeah.
Just carry on.
So from a commercial perspective...
Yeah, good work.
Yes. From a software freedom perspective, obviously.
Hmm. Well, you can see that if we made a website and podcast and a magazine about bananas and called it Banana Voice, we could say Microsoft should, you know, do more banana milkshakes.
That would be good.
It would be great, wouldn't it? Dan Simon Mirland says, honestly, I feel that Microsoft is a sinking ship with its sixth highest profits this year. It has more or less totally failed in its attempt at getting into the mobile and server market. The only market they managed to keep their dominance on is the desktop, and that market seems to be failing as a whole. If I were to give a sincere advice to the new CEO in terms of business, I would advise him to give away the desktop for free and focus on highly expensive business software. I like that idea. Because then if you give away the software for free, then you create a bigger market for the highly expensive business software.
But they've already got, 90% of the desktop market?
Yeah,
there's only 10% more for them to get.
Yeah, but then that would cement the hole. That would make sure that 90% doesn't turn into 85% in a couple of years, and that doesn't turn into 80%, I guess. However, I personally hope that Microsoft will shrivel and die, and the death of this company will shock the masses and the governments into recognising the limitations of proprietary software. And if I could give a personal advice to the CEO on a human level, it would be this: quit your job.
Oh, okay.
To be fair, he's got, what do you say, he's worth $45 million. What's his motivation for getting up in the morning? Seriously, if I was worth $45 million, I wouldn't be here doing this podcast. I'd be on a beach somewhere and thinking, I don't have to work again. Awesome.
Actually, 45 million. Let's round that up to 50 million, if that's what he's worth. He's getting a salary of $1.2 million. So if he were to put that 50 million in a bank at an interest rate of 2.4%, yeah, why bother?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's that. Lucifer says, isn't Satya a girl's name?
That's what he'd say to the guy.
And are you going to make fun of yourself like the other stupid guy did? Right then. And then Saif says, in truth, it means truth or honesty in Hindi, which technically is not gender specific. I suppose it is a change from Bulmer. Bulmer.
Oh.
Excellent. Connie knew this is the last. This is the last little subtitled section. I've called it Stop Making Bad Software. Pretty much everybody said this. I think Connie said it best, though. Speaking as a Linux user keen on open source world domination, I would say keep it up. Current strategies seem to successfully alienate users and are driving people to other systems. If I were a Microsoft consumer, I would suggest stop breaking things that work well just to force users to upgrade. Embrace, enhance, and extinguish used to work to establish a monopoly, but now we live in more diverse ecosystems. If I were a Microsoft shareholder, I would give the basic version of the OS away for free to hospitals, schools, and students. No one would think of using pirated software or other operating systems if they could have a free OS with free software titles. Keeping the youth and healthcare chained in early is the key to sustain inertia. Ah, oh, sustain inertia.
Connie New should be the CEO.
Connie New's great.
Yeah.
As a human being, I would suggest, firstly, stop being a patent troll and declare the patent fights you have by announcing which patents are being violated openly. And second, embrace standards set by experts in the field, e.g. in web browsers, the cloud, document formats.
I think that's well said. I think if Microsoft wants to be respected, the company should compete on technical strengths and not pretending, saying there's big patent issues in Linux and locking down its file formats. Just compete technically. So may the best man win.
And they can compete technically. Some of their stuff is really, really cool.
Yeah, I wouldn't use it still because I want to use free software, but open source.
I really dislike the way they're going after patents sort of behind the scenes and, you know, just sort of... Yeah, I mean, it is just trolling people, but not doing it openly in court and saying these are the patents. They're just sort of getting deals. And
don't they make $2 billion a year on patents through Android or something?
Something like that, yeah.
Such a mess.
Well, Satya, I hope you enjoyed that.
we do are available for consultancy.
Many pounds. Or you can avoid our consultants' fees and go directly to linuxvoice.com where you'll see the full discussion thread.
Or shop.linuxvoice.com.
Yes. Shop.linuxvoice.com. Yes. So that's that. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for all your neurons, which we vocalised, and your masses, which we voiced.
Yes, the huddle's masses.
That brings us more or less to the end, doesn't it?
It does. I think it's been an excellent podcast, despite the fact it's gone way over time. Yeah. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I feel slightly less hungover now as well. I'm ready
for a beer.
It's
really nice having you here.
I've got another discovery. I just want to shovel it in right at the end. The cover, the front cover for Linux Voice, it's been output at a resolution of 2,400 dpi.
Whoa.
Wow.
It's like retina.
That means that when you look at it, it will be like, your eyes can't distinguish the individual pixels on the screen, and it'll be as if you're holding a real physical product.
Whoa.
I know.
How did Inkscape cope with that?
Well, it's vectors, isn't it? So Inkscape copes with it fine.
Okay. Brilliant. Thank you.
See you again in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.